Yeah. Sometimes the stars just align perfectly. And I'll explain why Oren's playing this music in just a second as we head out to the WadeFord.com hotline on Chris Thomas tonight. Welcome in our guest, Jeremy Johnson, Dogs HQ. Make sure you check him out there. And tapping into his expertise tonight, as Jared Curtis, just moments ago, after much speculation and innuendo, decided to make it official that he will be making the switch from Georgia to Vandy. So, Jared, how crazy has all this been for you, keeping up on the beat, and how surprised are you? And then also, why, to the best of your knowledge, did this happen?
Yeah, it's been brewing, it sounds like, for a month or so. But, you know, it's one of those things. Today's recruiting is such an exciting roller coaster of an experience. that's the best way I can describe it. You know, I think he, out of breath. Wants to play. You know, I think he's been the guy for 4 years. So you get to the end of your high school career, you wonder, hey, you know, where can I go and compete, get on the field and have a chance to do that? And that he found that he could do that at Vanderbilt in Georgia, you know. Wasn't necessarily going to be an opportunity immediately, just would have gone to his presence. And I think that's kind of where it started. And being at home, being close to home, was an opportunity for him to kind of create his own legacy, you know, especially seeing what Diego Pavia has done, you know, this year with Vanderbilt.
Do you believe that Vanderbilt, with him at the helm, can continue to have this level of sustained success? Or do you think what's going on there right now is, like you said, because of Pavia, and maybe is more of a one-off? I mean, for me, it's this level of success consistently for Vanderbilt would be unprecedented.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're going to try to find out. I mean, that's why you're going to make this move. I mean, Pavia kind of opened the door. I mean, if you really want to get down to the nuts and bolts of the football part of it, I mean, there are some similarities to what Jared Curtis' skill set is and Diego Pavia's skill set. He's just a bigger, stronger, faster, more athletic version of what Diego Pavia is. He even wears number two. So the jersey will be open for him next year. So I do think, you know, it will look similar, and I do think that it makes Vanderbilt somewhere that is an attractive place. I mean, this doesn't just end with, hey, getting Jared Curtis. Now you can tell receivers next year, in next year's class, in the transfer portal, hey, we got a guy that can really throw this thing around, and I know you're a receiver and you want to come catch the football. Let's come do this for the next couple years. And, you know, Clark Lea has a good foundational piece. I mean, the quarterback position is probably the most important position in sports. And I think, you know, Vanderbilt has their guy for the next couple of years, and he's talented enough to make that three and, you know, be a high draft pick at some point. So, I think I don't know if, you know, he'll be a Heisman contender. There's no way to predict that. But when you start talking about, hey, you know, is this something that can elevate Vanderbilt and make them one of those teams? Yeah, absolutely.
What does this mean for the quarterback room at Georgia?
I mean, it's going to be status quo at Georgia. I mean, I don't think you'll see a ton of movement now. I think, you know, the group they have there now will be the group they have there next year. I mean, Gunnar Stockton is going to be the guy. Ryan Puglisi is going to be the guy in waiting. And Ryan McGunnar is going to be the guy for Puglisi for that backup spot. After that, you know, Coulter again is a former walk-on that's kind of been around the program a couple of years. And 2025 signing Hezekiah Millender, an athletic guy that can move around as a runner. He's a good runner in high school. He's coming along as well. He's a redshirt freshman. He'll be redshirting this year. He's a freshman that they signed out of Clark Central last year. So, you know, they got five guys that are, you know, I think they like. So, you know, that's kind of where that'll be for maybe the next 12 months or so.
Talking all things college football, SEC, Georgia, with our buddy Jeremy Johnson. Make sure you check him out at Dogs HQ. Georgia, the latest poll, they move up to number three. It looks like they'll be settled in there, barring something unforeseen. This Alabama rematch, though, is certainly looming. We know Kirby's struggles against the Tide are pretty inexplicable, considering how successful he's been against everybody else. He said this week he doesn't expect a huge change in terms of game plan and strategy for this one. What do they have to do this weekend that they couldn't do last time around?
I think the first thing would be to start faster. I mean, you can't put yourself in a hole again. You know, that was where, you know, things got off the tracks for Georgia immediately. And, you know, being able to get off the field on third down has been something that we've talked about all year with Georgia, and they've done it at a little higher clip over the last half of the year. But that Alabama game was really when, you know, that conversation really started, because it just felt like Alabama got every third down, and then on the other side, Georgia couldn't convert third downs. So, you know, I think when you start there, you start fast, you know, make sure you get them the third down and then get off the football field on third down. I think you have a chance to win this football game. Georgia ran the ball really well on Alabama last time. I expect them to try to do that again. But I do think, you know, you're going to ask a little more of Gunnar Stockton, just because, you know, the explosive plays are what wins these types of games. I mean, you go back and look at their first game, Ty Simpson hit some big plays in the passing game, and that ended up being the difference, you know, and them having some opportunities to make, you know, and score early in that game.
Did what happened against Georgia Tech raise any level of concern because of the way that the game played out? It was kind of a slop fest.
No, I don't think these two games will have much. I don't think they'll look anything alike, just because I think, you know, it's one thing for you to lose like Drew Bobo goes out halfway through that game and you look up at the clock and you're up, you know, your defense playing really well. You know, why, you know, put the football in the air a bunch and try to, you know, throw the ball around the yard and give Georgia Tech, like, the only way they were going to come back and really threaten in that game is if you give them opportunities and give them turnovers and create plays for them. So, you know, I think that was more of a, hey, all right, we're in this situation, you know, let's pack this in and let's try to run this down their throat and get out of here. And, you know, I think Malachi Tolliver and whoever else is going to play center this week will they have a week of preparation now versus, you know, being thrown out there in the middle of the fire trying to figure out what's going on after not getting any reps. So, I do think it was a bit of a, you know, I don't think it's as much of a Georgia was sloppy as it was credit to Georgia Tech kind of being, you know, angry about how they played the week before. I mean, you know, they did not play well on defense against Pittsburgh, and they definitely played better against Georgia on Friday, and I think that was, you know, that team having a little bit of pride and, you know, stepping up and giving Georgia some problems.
You covered the SEC for a long time. Do you ever remember a situation with this much pomp and circumstance over a coach who's never coached a playoff game?
I don't think I've ever seen anything like this. NFL, college football, basketball, baseball. What a way to end an era and start an era. You know, I don't know what will happen there, but moving forward. But the way this is starting could be a play on Broadway or a movie directed by M. Night Shyamalan. Michael Bay or somebody, anybody. It was wild to follow this whole Lane Kiffin saga.
So when it comes to the team that was left at the ball, so to speak, does John Summerall have a real shot to turn Florida around?
Absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, to me, in the SEC, when you start chasing names and chasing, I mean, at some point, All of the coaches that have been successful in the SEC, they were people that the people in the SEC didn't know. I mean, when Urban Meyer showed up at Florida the first time, I mean, he had coached Utah. I mean, and they made one BCS bowl, and, you know, I'm sure people were just like, well, why are you doing this? And then he has one of the, he rattles off one of the greatest eras in Florida football history. And I'm not saying John Summerall is going to do that, but there are the makings of a really great thing at Florida if it's done correctly and it's done with patience and care. I think we've gotten to a point in college football where everything's about microwaving success. And, you know, sometimes you got to – it's college football. It's all about development. I mean, and we don't want to admit that. We kind of want it to be – we got to win now like the NFL, but that's not necessarily the case. That's why Georgia never really goes anywhere. It's because Georgia's developed a foundation that – continuously can just replenish itself. I think if you allow John Summerall to do that at Florida, in 4 years you got something that can be really special, just because of the talent that's in the state of Florida that he can continuously develop and pull from.
What do you make of a team like in the latest rankings, again, that came out? Oklahoma's number 8. They have the record. They have some big wins, of course, but the offense has not looked right since the Mateer injury. So do you feel like the playoff committee is right by sticking to their guns there, going by the formula, or should they consider more of what they did with FSU a couple of years ago, where they look at the state of the team and not just the record?
You know, and I think that was what everybody was so worried about back then, was what kind of precedent that was setting. Because now you kind of have to. I mean, you kind of have to say, well, Oklahoma's not Oklahoma, but then also you can't necessarily put them in front of Alabama. I mean, you can't put Alabama in front of them, right? I mean, they beat Alabama. So it's like, you know, there's a couple things that play there, but then you look down even further, Notre Dame is ahead of Miami with Miami beat Notre Dame. So, I mean, technically Miami's on the outside looking in right now, because if you're going to throw that, G5 team in there and knock them out. So it's like, a team like Oklahoma, you know, that hasn't really necessarily looked like themselves. I mean, are we talking about the 12 best teams, or are we talking about the 12 most deserving teams? Because, you know, I think we get here every time, and it's kind of like a different discussion. And I think, you know, Oklahoma is one of those teams that we have to have that discussion. I mean, you can even throw Ole Miss in there not having their head coach. And are they the sixth best team without Lane Kiffin? I mean, but they have the resume to say they're the sixth best team. So, you know, it's like splitting atoms at this point, it feels like.
Before I let you go, and I know, you know, it's not an SEC team, but you specialize in recruiting. You look for relatable, transferable skills in these young guys to see if they're going to be good quarterbacks at the next level. Fernando Mendoza, I mean, he's big. He's got a live arm. He's smart. He can read the defenses. But just because he was kind of coming out of nowhere, do you feel like he has the skills to be an NFL quarterback?
Absolutely. I mean, if I'm thinking at the top of the draft, he's probably my number one guy right now. Like you just mentioned, big, strong, and he's played. The fact that he went from California and went to Indiana, and the production not only it continued, it even went up more. You know, he's a good decision maker. He's always usually on time with the ball. He clearly can take in the information and make good plays, and he's an athletic guy. So, you know, I think he's probably the guy you are saying, hey, this is the one I'm circling as one of the one or two guys, because he can translate between multiple types of systems, and that's a rare trait when you start talking about college quarterbacks going to, you know, the NFL, especially when you don't really necessarily have a bunch of the pro style offenses in college football at this point.
Jeremy, great stuff as always. We'll be checking you out at Dogs HQ. Thanks for the time.
Absolutely. Thank you guys for having me.
All right. That is Jeremy Johnson of Dogs HQ. Huge news. Jared Curtis, he's going to Vandy. But according to Jeremy, hey, man, status quo. We'll have Puglisi as the backup. Gunner will be back, and everything will be rocking and rolling. Really no change for next year. It was more about 2027 and beyond, which I'm sure – Oren, they'll have another 3 or 4 5 stars lined up in a neat line, single file, ready to go. All right, we'll continue the football conversation, take more of your calls. We'll also talk a little Hawks. They had a very interesting game last night, but they're rolling without Trae Young. All right, do we need to talk about it at this point? I think they're 11-5 without him. We'll see. Caleb Johnson joins me next.